Hello everyone, this is Mirko Guerrini and I welcome you to the Jazz Transcription Clinic, a monthly interviews podcast where we talk with accomplished jazz doctors about their lives, career and their personal secrets on the art of transcribing. If you want to improve at jazz, stay tuned and follow the Jazz Transcription Clinic on the socials for more content. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is being recorded. I pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be here today. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Jazz Transcription Clinic podcast. Today is a great honor to host and guest our guest doctor for today. He is of Greek origins but lives in London, the one and only Lev Germanlis. Hello, welcome.
Hey, Mirko, thanks for having me.
I just met Lev a few minutes ago because lately I've been searching up on YouTube of people that are transcribing obsessively and intensively. And Lev is one of those. And what really hit me looking at his work is that his transcriptions are very well detailed, which is something that I considered like a higher level of transcription, because what we do sometimes, so when you source out some transcriptions that you can find over the web, you can find a lot of transcriptions, but it's just the note and the rhythm. Sometimes there is a lot of compromise there. Well, I found out that Lev, who is a pianist and a transcriber too, but he is very accurate and I appreciate his work a lot. So I decided to contact him and he was very, very nice in accepting my invitation. So thanks for being here and giving your precious time to my podcast. Thank you, Lev.
My pleasure. Thanks for the compliments.
So the first question is probably the simplest one. Why do you transcribe?
Curiosity mainly. I think it must be curiosity. Yeah. I think when I was a kid, I played a little bit by ear. So, you know, someone would play on the radio and I would like, oh, what are those chords? And I would like try as best as I can to find what is happening in a song that I liked. And I, by the way, I have classical training. And as you might know, especially when I was studying piano, that must have been when I was a kid, like 20 or more years ago. In classical music, they didn't really enforce the idea of use your ears, like listen to the harmony, listen to the... It was more like, here's a sheet music. That's how it goes, play it. And I had no problem with that, but I always felt like maybe this element was missing from classical training. And I ended up finding it around by myself. So it was curiosity that brought me to, what is happening here? You know, let me find the chords. And I suppose you take it to the next level constantly by trying to transcribe, or essentially, like for me at the time, it was like, you know, listen to a song and try and play it. You start from more difficult chords and then you go with melodies and then you start diving in deeper and deeper and you end up transcribing, you know, exact voicings of a chord, then more difficult solos and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, curiosity is the answer. Yeah. And it's still curiosity.
Yeah, I was classically trained too at first. Uh-huh. So I have a master degree in classical saxophone, actually, which is great. My first degree. And then I took a degree in jazz too. But I know what you mean. And it took me, even when I started studying jazz, my transcription skills were so bad. It took me like 1 month to transcribe one chorus, you know, over a blues, because what you said, you know, I was never required, you know, to listen. And also another thing that frustrated me a bit was that at least some of my former teachers were always telling me how to play. But it was their idea to play. They never asked me to think and reflect on how I would like to play that phrase, which is something I learned later when I discovered that, you know, if you use your ears, you can not only play a lot more things, but you can play your own style.
Absolutely.
And your own way.
Well, I think classical music gets a really bad rep around the world. At least it did when I was, again, younger. I don't follow that close now, either the classical education or classical music. But when I was a kid, it got a really bad rep that everyone is really close-minded and there is no room for creativity. But I think I was also really lucky. At some point, I had one or two teachers that explained to me that, you know, classical music is just a style of music. It's still music. The people who wrote that music were just being, they were composers. They were just creating the music they liked. No rules, no formula. They just went for it. So now your job is to interpret these works.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of place for creativity. How fast do you want to play it? What interpretation is going to be really dramatic? Is it going to be this and that? So they allowed me to understand that actually, there is space for me to interpret it the way I want. There are some suggestions on paper, you know, forte, piano, dynamics, articulation. But I think I also appreciated the room that there is for creativity. And then, you know, you Google a classical piece of music online and you see different players playing it and everyone's playing it differently. And this is something that I actually appreciate. I like it, the variety.
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't want to sound, you know...
No, not at all.
Too negative, but it was just, you know, my process of getting to expand my views. I still listen to a lot of classical music. I sometimes have the fortune to play with symphony orchestras, and
wow,
I have a huge respect, you know, and I think things have changed because, you know, I think I'm a bit older than you. So my teachers were, you know, the past generations, and you were right that they were a bit, you know, close-minded and a bit too strict with you know, their views. But I met a lot of young classical players, exceptional, fantastic classical players, and they are very open and they can play also different styles, and that's great.
That's good.
That's good. So, yeah, it's an evolution. So next question would be, what do you expect to bring home when you transcribe a solo? What are your expectations?
Well, let's say curiosity drives me to do it, but when I start doing it, then I, first of all, one thing I gain personally is literally it educates me about the playing and the inner workings of a musician, whoever is I'm transcribing. And I think in the beginning, I was maybe more gravitated towards keyboard solos because that was something that actually I felt that I lacked, because I only discovered jazz music in the later part of my life. I didn't grow up listening to it. So everything was really new to me. So it could be a simple jazz lick that now a jazz cat would be like, oh, that's, you know, that's everyone plays that. But for me, that could be absolutely brand new. And I was like, oh my God, how do you do that? What is this exactly? So I wanted to see it in front of me and play it slowly and dive into it. So I think even now, but especially in the beginning, what I got personally was it just taught me so much, so much. Probably the best educational tool I had in my life. Then it just crossed my mind, how about if I publish those transcriptions and other people can have the same, you know, the same effect, get the same help. And this was like just a little bit of an extra push. The fact that I'm going to publish it, it was like you have someone to, you know, keep you in order to keep doing it. I never got bored of it. I still love it. I love it. But, you know, sometimes you might be like, oh, you know, I'm not feeling it this period. But if you try and be consistent with posting and showing your work, then it can kind of, it can be a little bit of a motivating factor. So
absolutely,
I think that's what helped me keep doing it. So I don't regret publishing them. And I think another point that I can make about as far as accuracy is concerned, when you know you're going to publish something, especially if you make a video of it and you put it on YouTube, as you know, you can't just go and change a little thing later if you make a mistake. So you, I mean, at least with my character, I try, you know, to be as accurate as I can so there are no mistakes and actually there is nothing left untranscribed as much as I can. Sometimes, you know, I draw a line. I'm like, okay, I really can't hear what's happening here. But I think this helps with accuracy because I know that I can't really take it back if I upload it. I mean, I could, you know what I mean? But this is my motivating factor to also be really accurate and really precise as much as I can. And again, drives me to be as not perfect, obviously, but as close as I can with my current ear training abilities. I bet if I try it in 5 years, maybe I'll do it better. But, you know, that's how it is. I look at my past transcription sometimes and I'm like, oh my God. But it's fine. I don't fuss about it at all. We all learn. We all become better. It's absolutely fine.
Right. And how do you choose the solos that you are transcribing? Is it a market? Is it a marketing choice, or is it a passion or something that catches your curiosity?
That's a good question. So again, since curiosity is my driving factor, a lot of times I'm just going to be listening to music or a song pops up on my recommendation and it just, there is this blink moment. Oh my God, listen to that. I need to transcribe that. Or it's a bunch of chords that are just so nice. And even in the moment, I might be kind of understand, I can understand what's happening, but I still want to see it. I still want to put it down and see it because I was like, that's really, really, really nice, really good. So that is usually the moment that I add it to my list. And then when I'm in transcribing mode, I have the time, I have the mindset, and I feel, okay, let's do some transcription. I go through my list and I pick a song that I feel in the moment. You said if it's a market choice, the transcription market is such a niche market that there's no really a big difference. There are artists that I have noticed that they perform better. Let's say you upload a video or a transcription for Anomaly, which is a really nice Canadian artist in this kind of new jazz vibes. And I can see how it performs better and how people immediately gravitate towards it. First of all, because it's good. His music is really good. It's hip. And hopefully my transcription is decent. So that makes a combination that people are like, oh, okay, that's a good one. They maybe share it with each other. They save it. So yeah, if Anomaly, for example, or any artist like that puts out a new song, usually I will listen and be like, is this transcription material, you know?
Yeah.
It's not really a factor. Sometimes I upload, you know, songs that are really unknown, like, you know, you wouldn't really know the artist or something, only because I think it's just a good transcription and I would do it for me anyway, because I'm just curious.
Yeah.
So it's, again, if I hear something that I like, I rarely go for like a little bit of a research because I have such a massive list to get through. And people send me suggestions these days, which is really helpful. So I have like a big back catalog of songs that I have to get through. And I keep adding and adding. Yeah. So that's how it is.
That's good. And just to dive a little bit into what is your methodology. So can you talk to us and explain?
Yes. Do you mean the process, like how I go about it?
Yeah,
I think I kept my process fairly similar as far as these transcriptions go that I've been doing, let's say the last 5 years, which is they tend to be either a solo from any instrument or an actual song, and I put down all the chords of the piano and stuff. I tend to literally sit in front of my setup, which is a pretty normal studio setup, speakers, screens, a little mixer, MIDI keyboards, because I'm also a producer. So my setup is always ready to go in that way, which, by the way, for me, and I think it's great advice for anyone, if you're trying to do anything, either creative or transcribing or production, make sure you have a setup that it's always on, always ready to go. No need to plug sound cards, no need to plug the keys. You press a button and everything is ready, because if you have to do all the extras, it's difficult to motivate yourself. For me, I have no excuse. I press a button, the computer is on, everything is connected, and I can start transcribing immediately. And my process, as if you want to be a bit more technical about it, is I will usually download the song, put it on Logic, and I suppose it can be any DAW. For me, it happens to be Logic Pro. That's what I use. This allows me to see the waveform, so I can know where I am. I can move freely back and front if I'm trying to transcribe a particular moment or section. It's obviously extremely helpful because I can slow down the song, because sometimes I'm trying to transcribe something that it's really fast. For me, it's impossible sometimes to transcribe it in the normal speed. It's just too fast to listen. And if you want to talk about being precise and accurate in voicings and notes and phrasing, you have to slow it down. You really have to slow it down. And I will, although I have a piano in front of me, I have a MIDI keyboard in front of me connected immediately. So if I hear a phrase, I can immediately play it. And, you know, I can start by going, oh, I hear that phrase. I play it. I see what it is. And I then notate it on Sibelius. That's what I use to notate music. I sometimes skip that part. I don't need to do it. I can hear it and I can notate it straight away. I don't need to play it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I go. I strive to notate it as quick and effective as I can. And then I start, you know, going back to what I notated, and I start to do a little bit of analysis for myself as well, kind of seeing what's happening, where is the song going. I don't necessarily listen to the song many times before I start transcribing it. If it's a song that I happen to have listened many times, sure, that's great. But if it's something that I just discovered literally right now, and I was like, oh, that's so cool, I obviously have not internalized it, but I might just start transcribing it immediately. I don't care. I'll just go to the part that I want, put it on Logic and start and put the phrases down one by one. And for me, it's they're both actually rewarding. I don't need to first internalize it, listen to it a lot, and then dive into it.
Which is something that we usually suggest to our students, right?
Yes. Listen. That's why I insisted on that point.
But I get it that when it becomes a sort of, you know, parallel job or an activity that you want to make a small profit out of it, you have to maximize the time.
Yes, absolutely.
So I started, you know, doing transcriptions for myself where I actually memorized the whole solo.
Wow.
And
that's
still,
good. That's
I
really
still
helpful.
Remember like four or five of them, you know, from bar one to the end. But now, you know, when I want to publish a video, I sometimes, like you said, sometimes I just start, and I like to video myself while doing it to show my process, you know, which could be different from other people, but it works for me. So I thought that was of some interest, and I talked in my videos how I was able to hear those notes and why I decided that that thing was a quintuplet or, you know, a crotchet triplet, and so on.
I find that also really interesting, by the way, and I think more people should do that, and I think probably I should do a little bit of that, kind of show my process at some point. But it's just I have to say the reason that I haven't done it is probably I am quite busy, I mean, with everything, so that doesn't help to find the time to, you know, set up the camera, relax, decide on the material and go for it. Sometimes life gets too hectic, and I just never thought of, you know, being on camera and doing something like that, but maybe in the future it would be a cool thing to do. Maybe we can even end up helping some people, who knows.
I try to do also some live transcriptions with a proper chat on, and but unfortunately the internet connection here is not, you know, quick enough to make the whole experience really smooth. It was lagging a bit too much.
I
So
see.
unless I find a better connection, I will have to reconsider that. But yeah, I thought what was interesting for a lot of people is to see that the more you transcribe and the more you develop the ability to hear things without checking. You know, I also have
100%.
like a keyboard here that is always, you know, connected, and saxophone back there. So I'm ready, you know, to check things. But
That's good.
lately I'm using instruments less and less, even because, as you said, you can slow down tracks.
Yeah, which I think is really helpful. I think you should use the tools because I've heard of people transcribing back in the day with the vinyls, and you had to go to the vinyl and just move it slightly behind and then listen. No computer, no automation, pen and paper and a vinyl, which I admire. Wow, the motivation to sit down and practice like that, it's crazy. I'll never know these times. You know, I'm a kid of the modern generation, let's say, of the computers
Absolutely.
and everything.
And my father was a saxophone and clarinet player too, and he used a different methodology. He had a tape recorder, and so he used to buy vinyls, and when he heard the track that he wanted to transcribe, he was transferring onto the tapes. And I still have that tape recorder, and it's still working. And it had a switch, half speed. So that was back in the days, you know, in the 50s. That was the way they could slow down. But
But that means
the pitch
the pitch will fall, yeah.
was going down an octave. So he was transcribing like tenor saxophones, and it was like, boom, 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 boom. But you still, you know, slow down and can hear the pitch.
Sure.
But you know, they were finding their ways. But definitely they had, you know, it was more difficult, but
For sure.
it could improve their ears a lot quicker.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because when you use technology to do the job for you, your skills, you know, progress very slowly, I believe.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true.
And I guess you already partially answered to it, and you said you write it down. So the question is, do you write it down? And you said yes, but I'm interested, do you always write it down? And if yes, apart from the fact that you want to publish it and possibly sell it, is there another reason why you write it down?
So yes, that's a good question. So of course, if I want to publish it, 100%, I will write it down, and I will make also sure that it looks nice and tidy and clean and easy to read. Because as a reader myself, when someone presents me with some sheet music to read on a gig or in any situation, I know how I will complain if it's difficult to read or let's say not intuitive. If he has an 8-bar structure and he has 7 bars in a row and then 9, I'll be like, what is wrong with you? Make it easy to read. So, knowing the struggle as a reader, I will make sure it's as easy to read as possible, as much as I can do it. But if I do it for myself, no need to publish it. Just say, I'm doing it for myself. It might look a little bit more messy because I know I did it. I know how it is. I know what to expect. So, for me personally, it might not look as tidy, but still will look the way I prefer it. And for sure, sometimes I transcribe things that are not for publishing, it's just for my own pleasure. And maybe I won't necessarily write it down. I would just play it and see what's happening and be like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's interesting. I see what's happening here. And that's it. This is where it's gonna end. I will only sit down to properly write it down. And if I'm planning, as you say, to give it away or if it's for someone else. And I also do, I think what also put me into the transcribing mode in general, apart from as a kid, you know, listening to songs and trying to figure them out in the radio, when I started doing function gigs, because I started doing gigs with my bands. So there was no mention about sheet music in bands or writing charts. It was just our songs. We would just write songs and go and play them, you know, rock songs and stuff like that. But when I started doing functions, I realized that I need a repertoire. I realized that I will have to, if I want to be professional, I'll have to learn a lot of songs and fast and quick and last minute. So I ended up doing a lot of charts, usually core charts. But I realized that if I once sit down and write it correctly and pay really close attention to the chords and the structure, and I just focus for like 10 minutes really intensely to make sure my chart is foolproof, all the chords are correct, the structure is correct, no doubts, then if I trust that myself in these 10 minutes I did it correctly, then in the future, if in 3 years from that moment you ask me, oh, can we play that song? We're on stage, right? Can we play that song? I really don't remember that song. Don't remember the key. I have no recollection, but I will pull up my chart and I'm confident to follow it and that it's going to be okay because I know that the moment that I did it, I was serious about it and made sure I wasn't just being, yeah, it's an F minor or whatever. No. I made sure I knew it's an F minor 9 and it's this voicing and it's this what I'm expected to do if we're talking about being professional, you know? So I did a lot of chord charts for all styles, obviously. You know how function world is for like party bands and stuff like that. And I now do it actually professionally for other function bands all around the world. I do charts and arrangements for them and stuff like that. And you obviously have to write it down. So I had a lot of practice writing things down on Sibelius and all that stuff, which really helped me with my transcription work. But I think that's where I got my start in transcribing, mostly doing chord charts. And sometimes I realize you write it down and then you just never have to look at it because you learned it. Some songs are really easy. It might be literally four chords and a really simple structure, but if I haven't done this 5 minute process to write these four chords down and find the structure, because sometimes that's all it takes if it's a simple pop song. If I get to the gig, I might start w worrying. Wait, was it that chord? Wait, is there a rest here? But the fact that I spent these 5 minutes to write it down, it just put it in my memory. And then, although I have the chart in front of me, I'm not looking at it at all. So writing it down, I think, helps me memorize. So
And the more you do, the more you retain because your brain is going to catch all the patterns. So you're talking about, any style of music is, characterized by specific patterns, even chord progressions.
correct.
And your ears start to pick them up, So the time that takes to figure out what is that chord progression is every time you transcribe, you're shortening that time up.
Absolutely, yes.
And that's really good. I can tell stories and examples, being in a studio recording with a pop artist where, the song is played once, and while the song is played, you literally
Absolutely.
transcribe the chords in real
Absolutely.
time. And then, you just do a check. But if it's a simple song, you can do it. And his ears work like muscles. So the more you repeat doing the same exercise and the more accurate they
Yes.
become and
You
quicker.
know what it reminded me of? When I came to London, I studied in a unit called LCCM. We did music performance essentially. And it was all styles, a little bit of jazz, a little bit of pop, a little bit of all different genres. I think it was really, really useful for me. And we had a class. I don't even remember what was the name of the class, but it had such a great concept, which I think more people should do something like that. So essentially, the class was, let's say, two drummers, two bass players, two guitar players, two keyboard players, four or five singers, a couple of horn players. You get the vibe. And it was a 1 hour class. And the purpose of the class is you start the class, you decide on a song that most people have never even heard of. And the purpose is by the end of the class, you should be able to play that song from beginning to end. So it was how essentially professional musicians would work in the studio to learn a song quickly and efficiently. You
That's
hear a
fun.
demo, You keep your notes exactly as you said. You listen to your own parts first. You listen to what everyone is doing. Make sure you know where you come in, where you come out, what are the chords, what are the sounds you need, what is the vibe, what is all the little intricacies you can find as quick as you can. And then you start playing. And obviously, the first day will be bad. Then you start listening to more of everyone because it needs to be also be musical. It's not just about playing the notes. And I thought that was such a great process.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough before uni to be able to play with bands and do a little bit of that. But I thought this class was super useful. No matter how good you are, this is just always something more to discover. And it was a really fun one.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a good idea. I should talk to my, you know, superiors at uni and suggest.
Yeah.
I think it's good. And do you practice your transcriptions and how you practice your transcriptions?
The short answer is not often. So if a transcription, I really, really, really like it, and I heard it and I was like, oh my God, that's great. I will essentially, after transcribing it, now that I'm, you know, more familiar with it, I will just sit down and play because I'm just curious. I will rarely strive to play it perfectly on the final tempo because I don't have any motivation. If I'm not going to perform it anywhere or I'm not going to take a video of it, I don't feel as motivated to perfect it. I want to reach the point that I internalize what's happening. I understood and I enjoyed it and I got something of it. I don't consider myself a virtuoso player, a pianist or in any instrument. I mostly consider myself more of a musician, producer, and this and that. So I don't have the need to be really, really proficient in playing my instrument, really technical, really fast. I mostly am curious to be able to understand what's happening and be able to come up with really novel and rich ideas, good arrangements. And I think that's where transcribing is helping me. And with soloing as well. So maybe I'm not able to play a solo as fast as the final tempo when I transcribe it, but if I can play it slowly, I understand the ideas, so all these things will kind of flow into my playing later on when I'm playing with a band. So that's the reason that I would actually sit down and dive into actually playing and learning more of a transcription. But sometimes, just the fact that I put it down and I saw what's happening and I really slowly played some phrases and I figure out some voices, that's more than enough for me. I don't need to go back into it. I publish it and I say goodbye and that's it.
Yeah. All right. It just happened that three days ago, I bought this book. I bought it in PDF, but then I printed out. Uh-huh.
The Practice Notebooks of Michael Brecker. Okay.
Right?
I don't know that book. Let me take a note of it.
I think it's a bit recent. And so someone, I think with the family permission, was able to get their hands on all his notebooks that he used to practice. And it starts with book one, where he lives at Indiana University. And it's fantastic. It's, you know,
short. No doubt, no doubt.
It's almost, I feel almost, you know, a voyeur in spying
exactly
into his process. But this is the first page of his notebook where he was at Indiana University. And there are already extracts of transcriptions, and then he was trying to get ideas out from transcriptions, and then there are, you know, harmonic ideas and progressions, and there was a page later on with ideas on syncopations.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really good to see, you know, what he was and how he evolved, because then you go to book three, for example, is 73 to 75. Uh-huh. And, you know, it starts with patterns and maybe
that's really interesting.
They come out from transcriptions. And then there are some notes saying practice in 12 keys. And I remember that he must have done this process so many times that he was absolutely scaring the speed Michael Brecker was able to transcribe anything in 12 keys was I never saw
anybody. Well, no doubt, that's
and
the, I don't think there is a limit, like the way you can evolve, it's crazy sometimes, and you never stop learning and never stop becoming better until you die, literally.
Yeah, but
as long as you have the motivation.
It's still, you know, it also shows that if you empower yourself through the ears, you're right, there is no limit. Because even transcribing in 12 keys, it means that he's just memorizing the sound of the lick of the pattern, and then he's able to start on any note because he knows exactly how to pull out that sound from the keys. If you start intellectualizing the process, if you start thinking, okay, the pattern was in F major 251, so if I transcribe it in B flat major, will be C minor 7, it's too slow. If you can do it on the spot, it means that you know exactly where all those sounds are, not the notes. You stop.
Yeah, you need to know your instrument, of course, to be able to do that. But actually, I'm really fan of this approach that takes the faff of the notes and the analyzing away. And when I teach, I also like to transfer that, let's say, a more holistic view in my students, which is, it's really good to stand and analyze. And, you know, theory is prescriptive. It's not prescriptive, it's descriptive. It describes what's happening. It's not any rules. So if you listen, as you say, to a lick or a melody, try and see it, okay, it hits that note, then it goes a little bit up, then, you know, a little bit higher, and it goes an octave down, jumps up. No one cares about the key. No one cares about the note. Just play it. Is it in a different key? Play it in a different key. It's fine. Just make that sound. Make it come alive, you know? And then we can sit down and analyze why it's happening, why it's working. But I always like to see things like that. That's why I don't remember keys for songs that I've learned. I never remember keys. I remember chord progressions. But again, I noticed that a lot of jazz musicians are like, oh yeah, he's going from the two to the third, then to the minor fourth, and actually to I don't even remember that. I remember it as a journey. I was, if you tell me what the key is, I know that the first chord is the second. And then from then, I don't remember numbers or Roman numerals. I go, boom, beam, it's going to go, da-da-da-da, that's a seventh, then it goes semitone down, boom, then that becomes a minor, etc. That's how my brain works. So as a journey, then steps up and down, rather than actually memorizing chord names. And I think that actually really helps, because then you're able to play it in different keys, and you're able to actually internalize the truth of the harmony rather than names, because names sometimes mean absolutely nothing.
Yes. I do agree. And is this the way you incorporate ideas that you grab from the transcriptions into your own playing?
100%, yes. So it's not something that I suppose I would do it consciously. They just stay with me. Because if you hear a really, really cool movement, I can tell you this, what I noticed changing my playing since I started transcribing Robert Glasper, and this kind of new style of jazz pianist, and they do a lot of chromatic movement and stuff like that. And I noticed that being infused in my playing, because it's just so fun to do, so nice, just especially for piano, it's just so rewarding to be able to do that and move around the keyboard in such ways. It feels good, it sounds good, people like it. You get a good reaction, you know, when you do something like that. And it's really creative. And I noticed that this was infused into my playing without me consciously specifically practice how to do it, but just by transcribing and just really liking it, it just infused into my playing, and I noticed it happening. And I think that's how it happens. I internalized it first, and then it just started appearing in my playing, and I was like, oh, that's good, let me try a few ideas around that one. And just by experimenting and working around that, it kind of happened.
It's like, because I do agree 100% that you transcribe something and you cannot expect that at the next gig you will be playing some of those.
Yeah.
You know, it has to sediment, it has to go down deep
Absolutely.
yourself. It's like if you are going into, an isolation period where those ideas sit in a sort of limbo
A shimmer, yeah.
inside you, and then maybe after 6 months, out of the blue, you come up with an idea. And sometimes I even forget the original source, and
That's
then
how it is. That's how
after a
it is.
few years, you listen back to that recording. Hey, that's the
That's
line
where it came from.
I
Interesting. Exactly. Yeah.
and that's good. That's a good process because speculating a little bit on what you were saying before, like learning the sound, learning cool stuff, and then being able, with a saxophone, we have a limit that can be a big limit if we don't take some actions. And I'm talking about the issue of having, one button for each note. So when you learn the saxophone, it's very easy to fall into the practice of, this is B, is A, and this is G. And you immediately stop listening because you think, okay, B is this. You could, play, I don't know, a wooden saxophone or an air saxophone. You just think at the note name and which finger to press. But that's the big limit because then you stop listening and you become very mechanic.
Agreed. Yeah,
I
I
had
think. Sorry, keep going.
to work really hard to wipe from my mind that concept, and I had actually to design even some exercises where I was, for example, one exercise that I loved to try to get away with the idea that you connect buttons, with a, I was doing like the other way. Instead of saying G A B and singing G A B C, I was going down like G F E D. Try to force my brain, and it was difficult at the start, like singing.
Fascinating.
Like singing the note, even just singing is not easy, C-C-B-A-G-F-E-D-C. It's not easy, but it's essential
It's
that you are
yeah.
able to do so your brain is not stuck into thinking at the theory of the music, but whatever sound you want to pull out does not depend on the theory.
Absolutely, I agree. That's why I actually also I do avoid singing the notes. I prefer to use na 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 and scat the music. And whenever I teach, that's what I do. I never say to my student, play C D F or whatever. I say play do 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 la na. Para. And if they do a mistake, I tell them you did para. It's para. I don't tell them you didn't. You did GE. I just. It's first of all, it's faster to just sing it anyway. I don't have perfect pitch, so it means I need to look at the piano, to know where it was happening. Because, yeah, I 100% agree with you. Just it's not about the names. No one cares about the names. It's about the sound. The names are only for us to communicate and analyze.
Yeah, you said no one cares about the names, but I'm telling you, there are many, many people, and unfortunately, many, many music teachers that all care about the names.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I try to be, open and
Yeah, and they teach,
really.
that is C, you see this note here, that is middle C,
Yeah.
and they never connect, the
And
keys
I
together.
can tell you something else that I've noticed that truly works. And it's another thing that I like to apply when I teach. A lot of people are trying to read music, and the biggest mistake they make, they add extra steps that are wasting their time. So someone can. Is able to read music. They take a piece of sheet music to read on the piano. They look at a melody or a bunch of chords and they can do it, but they can do it slowly because what they're doing, they're wasting their time by looking at a note. They're like, okay, that's a C. They play it. They look at the next note, which is one note up, and they say in their brain, okay, the next one is a D, and then they play it. That's a waste of time. I always tell them, what you need to do is look at it. It's one above, you go one above in your instrument. Is it two above? Go two above. Calculate distances and find the journey of the melody. No one cares if it's an F. I didn't ask you if it's an F. I asked you to play the note. Therefore, don't waste your time in your brain to say the name of the note. And for some students, I think it's really difficult to go out of it. But when they can, when they do, there is an immediate jump in, they progress so much faster because, you know, they get it.
Truth is that it's easier to teach the other way. So a lot of teachers are lazy, or they simply have been taught that way.
Maybe, absolutely.
They don't know another way, but it's too easy, you know, to say to the kid, no, that's a D, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's hard to say, no, that note is da, and you played da, so you have to go.
Exactly.
Right? And the kid is looking at you and saying, so what I have to play? Well, you have to play da.
Exactly.
Find it.
And I think you should use imitation at all times of the educational process. Whenever I'm trying to explain to someone how to play, how to change something in the articulation, so play it louder, softer in the dynamics, or play it more staccato, more legato. Instead of telling them, oh, you need to play it more staccato, more detached,
right.
I tell them, this is what you did, I played, then this is what I would do, point the difference, and tell me how is it different, and then do it.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a longer process, but I think by them trying to figure out what is different, that's how they learn better.
Absolutely. So, the next question would be, we are almost at the end, don't worry.
I'm enjoying it.
Who was the most difficult player that you transcribed? The one that gave you more headaches?
Oh my goodness. well, probably would have to be Jacob Collier. Because his music tend to be complicated, technical, tends to be really rich harmonically.
Firework.
And sometimes it's, what is the word? It's surprising and it's not what you expect. It won't follow what you expected. So therefore, you always have to be on your toes, and there is not really room for guessing.
Yeah.
So everything is new, everything is interesting, everything is cool. So some voicings will be really rich, really weird, really unexpected. So for me, what has been a challenge is when I'm transcribing piano, not a solo, but actual piano playing, both hands, sometimes you have 7, 8, 9 notes at the same time. And as I said, I don't have perfect pitch. I have good relative pitch. So I will hear the chord. Maybe I can hear, okay, I hear the bass. It's an F. I hear the chord. It sounds like an F minor 11. I can hear the quality, but what is the exact voicings? And this is when I slow down and I have to obviously play it, and I try in different ways and I try to hear where is every note. And I was like, is it really a 5 there in that chord or no? And I hear again and again and trying to literally find the exact voicing. So I think because he is this kind of player that will play really rich and big chords, whenever I try to transcribe one of his piano parts, it's been a challenge for sure. Yeah. A fun challenge for sure, but definitely a challenge.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. And the last one is probably the silliest one, but just to, you know, relax a little bit and bring all the tension out. Let's say the world is in danger and you can save it by bringing the best transcription you made that will save the world. So which one will be?
The best transcription I made.
I mean, your favorite that you think it's so good that it will definitely save the world.
What a question. what could be a transcription that, wow.
I could rephrase the question like, the one transcription that taught you the most?
I can tell you probably it would be, you know, I thought of one, yes. The way you rephrased it helped me think. So one of the first transcriptions I think that I did when I started uploading on my YouTube channel was from a Robert Glasper performance of the song Levels. And I think it's just a piano performance by himself. It's like a 5-6 minute one. And I think it's actually, in hindsight, I don't think it's something that when you hear it, it's not really complicated. It's not your typical jazz piano song. It's because it's a cover of a neo-soul track. The harmony is fairly simple, doesn't go to many crazy places, but the playing, the choice of notes, the phrasing, oh my God, it's really beautiful. That's why I transcribed it, because I found it really beautiful. But I think doing it, it did teach me a lot, and I did see a lot of how this pianist thinks, essentially. And I think it's a good transcription, so maybe I would bring that one.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of my guests are answering this question with one of their first transcriptions. And I understand that, because the first one was probably the one that, you know, posed the most questions and that frustrated us the most. I remember my first transcription, it was like half wrong. So I had to rework many, many times to
absolutely
get to a point. No, I'll definitely have to check the transcription. I don't know the tracks, so I'm curious.
It's a beautiful song.
And do you have any album that you are launching or recently published that you want our listeners to know?
That's a good question. I honestly try to release as much music as I can with a lot of different projects. I'm now, as the most relevant thing, not that it matters, but the most relevant thing to the genre of the transcriptions that I tend to do is a band that I'm in called Malvis Medicine. We are based here in London, and we are about to release an album in a couple of months. We just recorded it earlier this year, and it's kind of like a jazz funk collective that we had, and we gig a lot in London and anywhere really, and I think this was going to be a really cool album to listen to. But until then, if anyone writes my name on Spotify Left German List, they will find all the work that I've done with all different artists and all my different bands and projects in all different genres, I suppose. So they can check me out there, or just follow me on Instagram and they can find things there.
That's really good. Of course, all the links to Left German List's website and pages will be in the video description and in the podcast description. I have no words to thank you, Lev. It was a great time.
No, I thank you. Thanks for having me.
And keep transcribing and, you know, populating the world with good content, as you are
will
doing
do
right now.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Cheers. Bye-bye.